When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzerhof. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again and welcome. Well, today on Forever Young, we have our very first guest couple on the podcast. Now, they've promised not to gang up on me, right? So I'll hold you to that. So let's announce who they are. And in no particular order, but ladies first, I guess, we have Beverly Knight.
Hello.
Hello, Beverly. Beverly has had a stellar career as a recording artist and musical theatre actress who released her first album, The B-Funk, way back in 1995, heavily influenced by American soul music icons such as Sam Cooke and Aretha Franklin. Beverly has released 8 studio albums. She's hosted 4 series of her BBC Two Radio 2 show, Beverly's Gospel Night, and is widely labelled as one of Britain's greatest soul singers. And in recognition of her outstanding contribution to British music, Beverly was awarded an MBE in 2007. And behaving himself, we also have Beverly's partner, James O'Keefe. James, welcome.
Thank you.
Beverly
there's
and James.
There's none of that accolade for me, I'm afraid.
Oh, but then a different type of accolade, James, for you. Beverly and James met through work on a TV set where James was working at the time as a production technician. And the couple were married back in 2012. James has his own podcast, The Plus Ones, which we will hear a lot about later, based on what life is like for the non-famous other halves of celebrities, which I do highly recommend. It's a great listen. And more recently, James is also the founder of The Unguarded Warrior, which is a retreat and safe space for men to open up on their vulnerabilities, mental health issues, and providing a support network to help achieve inner calm and peace.
Oh, I like that.
Did you like that?
Yeah, mate.
I'll write that down.
I'll put it on
your website. So look, one thing's for sure, we've really got quite a bit to talk about today. So welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. This is a real treat and an honour. So
It is. It's nice that we're together as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
We want to be together.
Well, yes, lovebirds.
Yeah.
We love having you here at Lanzerhof at the Arts Club.
Thank you.
And I know you're a bit of a dynamic duo, but we want to understand today a little bit more how you motivate each other to live a healthy and happy life together. And actually, with
beating
that in mind,
usually, isn't it? Bev hits me with a stick usually now.
Of course, but he's joking.
He is joking, yes. But fresh from your vitamin infusions. Exactly upstairs. Tell us why you have those and how you're both feeling today.
Well, we both have very, very busy lifestyles. And mine at the moment with a theatre show is physically demanding as well as, you know, mentally challenging, remembering lines and where you're supposed to be and things. And James is the same. Not so much the theatre world, but, you know, physically, your life
is... You don't want me in the theatre.
No, we don't want you in the theatre.
I'm a massive show-off, but yeah.
Yeah, but his life is also as physically and as mentally demanding as mine, just in a different way. So the vitamin infusions just kind of help you to build back the energy and any deficiencies that you may lose during the course of any day just by... working and working long hours.
And the fact that, you know, we don't get the nutrients we need, you know, no matter what diet you eat and no matter what supplements you take, we're all deficient in different things. So, you know, it's good to have a little top up and see how your body reacts to it. So, I think it's always a good thing to have done. Obviously, if you can afford it, if you can, you know, if you have the wherewithal to get it done, it's a very strong thing
worthwhile.
To get done. Yeah,
it's absolutely worthwhile. I mean, the way I feel right now is the only way I can
you
describe
can
it,
it
is
yeah,
zingy.
Yeah.
Zingy.
I like that word. Okay. I like that. Well, look, I think we'll we'll probably need to separate and talk to you individually about your respective careers. But one more question that I have for both of you, seeing as you're feeling zingy, Beverly and Jane, is you both look incredibly well. You know, our listeners can't see that, but I can vouch for that. You both look incredibly well.
We did pay you £20.
So I'm cheap.
Yeah, I know. Not bad.
What are your secrets? And what is a tip, other than vitamin infusions, but what does a typical healthy week look like for you?
Oh, gosh.
Don't know if people are ready for my one.
James, you go first, because yours is detailed and long.
I'm quite, how can we put it? I'm quite full on, aren't I, in every aspect of my life. I'm quite, you know, my background was coming from a life of not good things back in the day, you know, drink, drugs, you know, just violence, just silly, you know, silly stuff when I was young. So I've been on a health journey for 20 years now, trying to discover different modalities to help my mental health and wellness. And I think coming from that, you have sometimes to replace negative, you know, things that you have in your life, you need to replace them with positive. So I go full on into a lot of stuff. So I've gone full into my health. I was a professional MMA fighter. So some of the stuff I do still to keep fit and healthy and well is a bit extreme still. Like, you know, we've got a chest freezer in our back garden that I fill with water, and I get in there every day. Cold water therapy. I swim in Hampstead Heath. I go anywhere we go in the world or the country. Mm. I'm like, right, where's there a lake? You know, we have to go. I have to go and find something to swim in, or whether it's, you know, I'm putting myself on retreats and do, you know, all sorts of different things. But I've got, you know, a movement workout that I do in the morning. I do my meditation, my breathing, you know, and then diet as well, obviously, and supplements. I've got quite a big supplement regime. So for me, it's quite a lot.
Yes.
I'm quite, you know, but I need that. I need that structure.
You've got a routine there, it sounds like.
For me, I need it.
That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, mentally, I need structure. I need routine to keep me balanced, to keep me from how I feel going back to how I was, you know, which, and that's not a good part of my life. So, but Bev, and Beverly's kind of been cajoled into some of them things.
Yeah. I mean, the fitness side, has
obviously
always
training,
been,
you
know, a big part of my adult life.
Yes.
Certainly since my career started, it was a period where I lapsed,
You did a lot of sports when you were young, though. Unlike me, I was a fat kid and not healthy when I was young, and you know, so I wasn't very good at sports. But Beverly
I was into my athletics, and but then I got to a point where I kind of lapsed a bit, and that showed, you know, physically it showed, it manifested itself. Got back on the trail to fitness and never looked back. So there is training, looking after myself with diet, as James was saying, really important to me. And some of the other regimes that James has now implemented into his life, he's been persuading me.
Are you talking about the cold water
therapy?
It's called nagging people.
Yeah, basically.
And they say, look, people say that nagging doesn't work. Well, I'm actually an advocate. It does work. Okay? So just nag and get stuff done.
No. James is always telling me about the cold water therapy, and I did try it, and yeah, I admit it really does. It really does.
Okay, but what's going on at the moment, Beverly?
Yeah, at the moment it's hard. I'm finding it hard. I really
Let's
am.
Talk about that, shall we, Emily? Let's have a counselling session.
So, well, look, the next step in your Lanzerhof at the Arts Club experience therefore has to be cryotherapy. So when you're next here, we'll arrange that.
Thank
too.
You, mate. Yeah, yeah.
That'd be amazing. Thank you.
So that's dry cold as opposed to wet cold.
Wet cold.
It might be more manageable for you.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I mean, I do see the benefits of it. I'm one of those people who likes to be warm and snuggly, but I do also realise that sometimes to be at optimal health, You have to push yourself beyond what is the comfortable boundary.
And then reap the rewards.
And then reap the rewards, exactly. Which James is always telling me.
But it's further than that. It's as human beings, it's life itself. You know, if we're comfortable all the time, we're not growing. We're just not.
No, we're not progressing
in any way, really. We're just, you know, you reach for that. It's like anything. You reach for the donut. You reach for the thing. Your brain is always telling you, well, that's the easy option. So you take it.
Mm.
So if you do that all the time, your brain is learning to take the easy option. Mm. If you can put yourself out of your comfort zone with cold water, with even standing outside with a pair of shorts on in the winter for five minutes, you know, on the grass, grounding and just getting some... Because we're insulated all the time by clothes and you know, everything else. So I think it's important to just sometimes get back to nature and just get back to connecting, and that's a big part of why.
And that
I'm
sense
doing.
Of well-being afterwards is significant, isn't it? You know, the endorphins that are released are just
for cold water, especially. For me, the biggest reason why I do it is mental health.
Mm.
For me, it's the mental health aspect, getting my vagus nerve in. Into cold water, the back of your head, which apparently wakes up your reptilian brain and et cetera. That is apparently key for, you know, mental health, mental awareness and emotional health. You know, I think that's not talked about enough as well. But you both
obviously talk with great passion about this, and that's perfect for us here, to, you know, in a health and well-being podcast, of course.
Mm.
But maybe now we can talk about you know, as individuals as well, because Beverly, you know, you've had an extraordinary career, and James, I know you'll agree. We'll start with Beverly first, 100%. And your longevity in such a fickle industry, actually. Is so impressive. I mean, we said at the top of the show, you released your first album, B-Funk, back in 1995.
That's right, yeah.
which I said earlier, I listened to last night. And it does stand the test of time. It really does.
Thank you.
Did you think back then that your journey would lead to you being, well, awarded an MBE and 26 years later being critically acclaimed in the West End?
I had no real kind of game plan beyond I'm gonna sing and write songs until there's no more me to sing and write songs. I'm so grateful that I have this career that has stood the test of time, and that's down to the support of fans who have, you know, been there from the beginning, and then others who have joined along the journey. And fortunately for me, it's crossed over different generations. I'm Gen X, and I got the millennials to come on board, which has been wonderful. And now even some Gen Zers. I'm really fortunate in that the way my career has gone has meant that people have been able to kind of pick up an element of what I do along the way, and then deep dive and find other things and other elements of my career to enjoy. So for me, I still look at my career now and think, how? Wow, I've put in a lot of work. There's been a hell of a lot of work and a lot of dedication. I absolutely am focused on my career, but also it's not just raw talent and you know, the tenacity. You can have both of those things, but you need to be making great decisions as well
and working hard.
And you've got to have those things. And the decisions that I've made along the way, you know, and latterly, some really big decisions, you know, changing management and so forth, has put me in good stead for the next decade along. And the career has just kind of blossomed from that point. So it's really important.
But that's also about not only, because everyone bleats on about working hard, and it's not enough. Like, we all know people who work like maniacs and still can't feed their families. So you have to work smart. You have to find a balance between making, as Beverly said, making really clear decisions and being focused on certain things. And sometimes you can only make clear, concise decisions when you're mentally in a good place. So you have to find some kind of balance in your life to then be able to make good decisions. I believe, anyway, that's my being what I've been through, the hardships and the stresses and the tough times. The times I've made the worst decisions are I've been under duress and stress.
Absolutely right. You know, absolutely.
So I think that's, people don't talk about that enough, that you have to be in a good mental place to make the right decisions.
To think strategically, clearly.
Exactly. And if you're stressed about money or your family or there's problems or that whatever's going on, you're not coming from a place of abundance. You're coming from a place of scarcity and being frightened and you know. So I think that's another big thing. And Beverly's been really good with that. She's always found a way to be balanced, I think, you know.
Balance is important. Yeah. I've seen, and we've all seen, countless of examples of brilliant artists who make terrible decisions.
Yes.
And, you know, in the ultimate cases, they do self-destruct. You see people who should still be with us. They're not. It's, you have to think smart. And sometimes working smart and thinking clearly goes against the grain of what the public perception is of what an artist should be. Yes, you know, rock and roll and sex and drugs and... That's all well and good, and it makes headlines, but it's not going to be beneficial to you.
You don't last 27 years.
You don't get that. You won't get that. There has to be a change.
Yes. What comes across is, I mean, clearly you're incredibly talented, Beverly, and you're too modest to sort of, but you are. But you obviously the hard work behind the scenes to look so effortless on stage. That's the bit that the viewers and the public and listeners don't see, because that's your reward at the end, is to look so effortless on stage.
And it's so important to put in the work for yourself, so that when you do stand on stage, you've got everything you need. And ultimately, standing on stage is the joy, is the reward in itself. It's not, well, I'm stood here because... I've got to pay for that kitchen and I've got this mortgage and I've got...
Sure.
The reward is standing on the stage and having that amazing two-way connection with an audience. They go home elated, you go home elated.
Yes.
And there is nothing else that feels more joyous. And
that must be an extraordinary feeling.
It really is. It's so... edifying to know that what you do is uplifting other people as well as yourself. And then the benefits, the additional benefit that comes from that is, you know, the byproducts of fame. So it is the wealth that comes with it, and the you know, the other trappings of fame, but they have never been the end result. For me, they've always been just that, a byproduct. What I always wanted was a career and a legacy.
Well,
that's it.
Yes, which clearly you are creating along the way of your in your career. But let's talk about little girl Beverly. You know, were you always the singer, the show off? Tell us about that.
I'll tell you that. I've seen videos of Bev, like family videos, and she's just loud, like blah, 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 like that.
I was.
And she's a lot different now, a lot, you know, because I think she was quite combative when she was young, very outspoken. And yeah, you know, and obviously I'm talking for you, but from my point of view, what I saw, when I met her, she was completely different. So it was, because I'm quite full on as well, aren't I?
Yeah.
And it's like, if we'd have both been like that, I think it would have been tricky.
Yeah, it would have been a clash.
You're the more chilled one, aren't you?
I'm laid back.
Yeah, you're the more laid back one.
As a child, I was, as James was saying, I was definitely a show off. I was very precocious in terms of performance. The stage and microphones and the public held no fear for me. I was happy to perform in front
and
of
still, and still
anyone,
doesn't.
And still doesn't. And that's never changed. I was that kid who, if mum and dad had friends coming round, they'd wheel me out to either sing or do my impressions or something. Because I just loved to perform.
You did impressions as well.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
She's got really good voices. She can do loads of different voices.
Give us one impression.
What ones do you do?
Okay. Who's this? Who's this? Right. You done me wrong. Your time is up. You took a sip from the devil's cup.
That's easy. You got to do one. Just a spoken one now.
A spoken one. Yeah. I can't
you
remember.
Can. Put a voice on. Do a voice of someone.
Oh, I can't think.
That was brilliant, by the way. That was really good.
I love you, Heather. Heather knows I love her.
Who
else? Oh, I can't think
all
now.
Right. No, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that.
She's very good, though. She's got good, good voices you can do. Yeah.
Okay, so you were the precocious 5-year-old that was
absolutely
forever showing off.
When
the conversation dried up, they'd wheel you out. Your parents would wheel you out to entertain everybody.
That was me. I mean, I was already doing school productions from infant school all the way through. Every opportunity I had to perform, I'd take it. Whether it would be in church or whether it would be in the extracurricular activities at school. Church was great because church was a real kind of training ground. And in the tradition of many, many soul artists, that's where I got my start.
Yes.
And people are pretty brutal. If you're not bringing it vocally, that church will be quiet. If you are, they erupt. So I knew I was on the right path because every time I sang, they erupted. So I continued like that all the way through my life, and those are the things that are the constants. Those are the building blocks that I have used onto which I have then built a career of performance, of writing songs, and now, latterly with a musical theatre career.
But I tell you, just to caveat something, what people don't see. You know, you talk about hard work and talent and all of that, but what people don't see is how much Bev appreciates everything and how much she takes and values what she's doing. Like, some people take for granted what they do. Bev doesn't. And that, I think that's one of the biggest things that you've got, like, the takeaways that any young person wanting to do this kind of career can take away. Bev is the same person, bubbly and lovely, kind to people, from the second she gets up to the second she goes to sleep, the taxi driver, the person bringing her to, whatever it is, she's the same to everyone. And everyone wants to work with her. Everyone wants to, is happy because she brings everyone together. And that's, I think, sometimes the biggest key in life is, even if you work in Tesco's, to be the best you can be, at whatever you do, you will add value to anything you do and everyone will gravitate to you for that. And I believe that's one of Bev's biggest strengths, is that, rather than the talent and the hard work and blah, 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 is that. That's what I think anyway.
Wow. How lovely to hear your husband say that about
really,
you, Beverly, huh?
It really is. Yes. It really is. It's
But it's something that people don't talk, these some things, everyone goes on about hard work and talent and blah, 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 but I don't hear people really digging into that. And, this is a health and wellness podcast, and you know, we need to talk about mental health, and we need to talk about things like that that keep, you know, that keep Beverly on that even keel, you know, that, because that's a big thing, isn't it?
Just picking up from that, I am well aware that to have music in my life and to be able to sing the way I sing is a gift that landed in my lap at birth. I could have parked it and just sung on the weekends or whatever, or I could have abused it, which I think is 10,000 times worse. To have that kind of a gift and then to squander it. For me, every day of my life, I wake up thinking, I have this ability whereby any song I either create or hear, I can then go out and replicate. And I know that puts me in a small percentile of the global population. And I'm really grateful for it.
Yes, you clearly don't take it for granted.
No, and I do everything to protect it.
Yes.
And to nurture it.
What... what's been a career highlight for you, if you had to pick one out?
The sleep. How dare you, Mario? I'm offended.
Well,
I'm offended you even asked, Mario.
Well, aside from meeting James.
a career.
Yeah, all right.
My career highlight. Well, I have been a Prince fan since I was tiny. I mean, you know, anybody who knows anything about me knows that I've just... absolutely my number one idol in life, in life of music, is Prince.
And she even sewed away once to go and see him in concert.
Yes, I did.
Sorry, Mum.
Yeah, I did. Snuck off, didn't tell Mum. Yeah. Oh, God.
Which was big.
Which was a big deal.
Like Bev to do that, you know. But anyway.
But the fact that I not only got to support him when he did his record-breaking run at the O2 in 2007, the 31-21 tour, but then the following spring he flew me to LA, didn't tell me why, but he flew me to LA and just said, you know, I want you here. It was the Oscars weekend. And to cut a very long story short, he had me perform at his private post-Oscars party where the great and good of Hollywood turned up, some still with their statuettes in their hand, and had me join him and Stevie Wonder on stage to sing, you know, to entertain
Getting goosebumps, Hollywood's, Beverly, listening to that.
I know, Hollywood's A-list, and... I look at that. I know it happened. You know, I've got a recording of... well, it's on Spotify.
Was it the year after? The 21 Nights thing?
Yeah, because that happened in September of 2020, of 2007. And then the February of 2008, that was when I went off to LA. We just got together.
When Bev did the 21 Nights thing with him, so 3 months after we met, I was side of stage chatting to Prince, watching my now girlfriend...
On stage,
my sister, massive Prince fan, in the audience. My brother was there, and I was just like, "Okay, this is odd. Is this how it's going
to
be?"
This isn't a typical day.
Yeah, no. It was pretty.
It was the most surreal and special thing that's ever happened to me in my career. And it's funny because people often will think it's an accolade that might have might be a career highlight, you know, and winning awards or things like that, but they're wonderful and I appreciate them, but when it is experiences, when your absolute idol invites you to sing with them on stage, there's no award, there is no greater accolade than that, and especially that will stay, especially Prince.
Especially Prince, because he doesn't just get your average person to come and sing with him.
No.
He doesn't.
I never got the call up.
Right. And you know, he doesn't, you know, there's only a few people in the world that Prince would have called. And you know, and that that's special.
It floored me.
It still hurts you, Danny. It's gone.
Yeah,
I know.
Yes,
it's tough.
It's a tough loss.
It is.
To your point earlier, you know, sadly he's no longer with us.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that again, health and you know, is that's health issues. You know, that was being given prescribed painkillers, and that's that American kind of way that they do, is they you know, it's injections and operations like at the drop of a hat.
There was another way.
My big thing is there's always another way, you know, and I think there is. We need to look at that in this community, and we need to say there is other ways to heal ourselves, you know.
Well, let's fast forward to today and the Drifters Girl at the Garrick Theatre. It has opened to absolutely rave reviews.
Yes, I'm thrilled.
And so maybe in your own words, Beverly, give us a synopsis of the show, the story and the themes covered, and your role as well.
So I, the show is called The Drifter's Girl, which is a reference to a line in the show that former drifter Rudy Lewis says to the character who I play, Faye Treadwell, when describing her. Now, what he means is, you're the lady who manages the drifters. And so the whole show is about Faye Treadwell and how she took this well-respected group that were doing okay in the US, and then as music changed, started to wane a bit, how she gave them a new lease of life and subsequently turned them into global superstars by relocating them to England. All true. And in so doing, she did something which, frankly, no other woman had done. There was no other female music manager, and certainly it was a first to be an African-American woman doing that in a time where women were demonstrably second-class citizens and black people were barely had their human rights covered in the US, in a place where, you know, segregation was enforced by the law. So she was formidable, strident, trailblazing, spiky. She had to be, but she was resilient, and she did it all to create a legacy, not only for the drifters, but something to give her daughter, Tina Treadwell, so that she didn't have to ever rely on anybody in life. She could have her own career and make her own way and her own money. It's an incredible story. Of course, it's backed up by the music of the Drifters, which just makes it a joy. And it's really funny. All of that sounds very weighty and serious, but it's actually a really funny show, funnier than we thought. There's a lot of great one-liners in there.
Is down to the actors, the lads. The four lads.
Adam, Tosh, Taryn and Matt star as the four drifters, but also as all the drifters. Yeah. So they're doing multiple role playing. They are basically every other character on stage. Whereas I just stay playing Faye Treadwell. They play everyone else, from a waitress.
Unbelievably. They are like, if anyone needs to see it, just a really amazing.
It's a masterclass of
fun.
Yeah.
But weighty. Like the performances as well, the singing and the dancing and the acting
Stellar.
From all of them are unbelievable. I know I'm biased because it's my wife, but you know, I don't.
You're allowed to be. And it's obviously dealing with very serious themes, but it's a joy at the end of all of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It really is. I mean, you know, she went through some trials, as you can imagine.
And it was circumstance that led her to be the manager of the Drifters. Did her
husband right.
passed away, is that right?
That's right. Yes. George Treadwell was the original manager of the Drifters and other acts, including Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, Nat King Cole. He was a well-established manager. And then he died. Lung cancer, 1967.
Apparently he's a story in his own right. So we've spent a lot of the time with the family and friends and stuff. And
just researching
his story is no joke as well.
That's right.
You know, but they're just a fascinating
power couple.
Yeah. Yes.
And when George Treadwell died in 1967,
she stepped up.
She said, right, amazing. Well, I'm going to manage the group. Whereas perhaps other people in the same situation would have sought out a new manager or handed over the reins to someone else.
She did it. Yeah, the fight for the lawsuit she was going, you know, the fight she had to go through.
People tried to take the Drifters away from her because she was a woman and they thought it was going to be easy to do so.
She sounds a formidable woman.
She was a force.
Yeah. You should see her daughter. She's
perfect
another
casting,
force.
Then.
Yeah. Thank you.
But her daughter is
her daughter's a force.
Well.
Oh, we really? Learned so, a lot about Faye.
We're friends with her and my God, she is a
she's an absolute
woman.
She's force.
Beautiful woman, but just so strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The apple did not fall far from the tree.
Beverly, maybe a loaded question, but of course it deals with the themes of racism, sexism.
Yeah.
Misogyny. I mean, how much has changed 50 years? And do you sometimes ask yourself the question, you know, what's changed? You know,
it's funny you should say, because often I do think, what has changed? Mm. You know, we still, the music industry is still dominated at decision-making level by men. Mm-hmm. By white, mostly white men, making decisions over the future of someone like, I'll use myself as example, back then, a young black woman with no real understanding of the background, of cultural nuances, just musically where things should be placed. So many things, you know.
Yes, you did experience that at the start of your career, didn't
you? It was difficult.
A particular song that you wanted done in a less produced way.
Yeah.
And that led to, I think, the producer leaving.
Oh, yeah,
and
he left.
You got your own way.
I did in the end.
Yes.
He just walked out the session, which was horribly unprofessional. And then I was asked what I'd done to provoke that, which was just horrible. But in the end, luckily for me, the record label boss sided with me and thought, well, she's absolutely right. It shouldn't be an overproduced song. But that meant I was fortunate in that circumstance. The music industry it's changing slowly. We're seeing a lot more women, a lot more female artists. In fact, statistically, there are a lot more successful female artists around present than even there are males, who newer artists coming through. And that's testament to just the dogged determination of a lot of women. But as I say, decision-making level, the executive board and upwards, still male-dominated.
The thing that I've seen that Beverly did, that she fought through, was to make decisions, even if it didn't really further her career. She could have taken the easy... Again, it's like... the easy option sometimes. Mm-hmm. You take the apple, but you take the biscuit over the apple, you know what I mean? But you take the easy option because it's easy. It doesn't mean it's good or it's going to work in the long run. I think that's what given Beverly her longevity in her career is not taking the easy decision sometimes.
It's actually a sad indictment on the industry and society that you have to be that formidable woman to overcome those barriers, whereas maybe for many, many others, it's the easiest thing in the world, whereas you have to fight to get what is right.
It is always still fighting.
It still
feels like a fight. It's still... trying to win hearts and minds by any means necessary. And in my, me being me, it's usually with charm. But I'm aware that the journey to success for me has always been quite a steep uphill gradient. But while it's been incremental, it's been fabulous because everything that I've decided in my career, I can stand by. I've never felt as though I've been pushed down a cul-de-sac musically that I didn't want to go down, yes. and as a result have had to spend years fighting to reverse out of it. That's not happened to me. But what it's meant is it's been a longer journey
yes.
to success.
And I assume you look back with, therefore, with great pride on everything you've produced.
Absolutely.
Some of which you've had to fight for, but it's
that's
all
right.
your work.
That's
it's
right.
Your body of work.
I'd prefer that to the other way, to yes. any other way,
yes.
really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's bring it back to, you know, your health as well. Mm-hmm. You've been very open in the past in discussing a health scare that you had
yes.
years ago. And if you could share a little bit about that. The reason I'm asking as well mm-hmm. is I know doctors said back then that if you hadn't have been as fit as you were, mm-hmm. it may have been a different outcome.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you'd like to share that, that'd be wonderful.
I discovered that I had uterine fibroids. Mm. I was in Toronto, starring in the musical The Bodyguard. I knew I had this protrusion in, you know, the lower right side of my abdomen.
Before you went, right?
That was before I went, yeah. and I was
and
like,
it just grew.
I was like, what is this? I thought, oh my God, I've got a hernia. Mm. Well, I'm starring in the show. It's going to have to wait, you know, until I get back to the UK. But something in the back of my mind was really concerning me. So I went to the hospital with the company manager. And
great,
the first thing,
they?
The, who sh- were, the show was yeah. amazing.
The
they
really
looked after me.
Up,
they were fantastic. Yeah. The first thing they did was take my blood pressure, which, you know, straightforward, or so I thought. It was through the stratosphere. So that meant I had to stay in.
Was it like 250
over something
oh
crazy?
Yeah,
100.
Like she was about
the diastolic was 100 and something,
yeah.
and
oh
the systolic
goodness.
Was 200. And,
so she
I mean,
120 over 8, and it was like 250 over 150.
It was
it was
insane, know. And they just couldn't understand why I hadn't had a stroke. While I was still standing up
and still performing
and still night. Performing
yes.
and still on stage
night,
they took me in, they did an ultrasound, they said you've got huge uterine fibroids, you need to get them out. What I hadn't realized is the reason my blood pressure had gone through the roof is because my urethra was being squeezed by the size of these fibroids, which was telling my kidney that my blood pressure was low when it wasn't, which meant the kidney sent the message to the brain, to the heart, work harder. Of course, the blood pressure goes up. It was just luck that I was okay. And of course, the fact that I was very fit, very strong, very healthy, really had looked after myself.
Until you were given blood pressure pills and then you passed out.
And then I was given tablets to control the symptoms,
yeah.
which made me ill.
Yeah,
previously.
She literally passed out.
It was awful.
So, yeah.
I was on the phone to you at the time. Yeah, that was awful.
Yeah.
I won't go there. the long story short version is that I just wanted to finish. I didn't have long to go in The Bodyguard, so I thought, I just got to get through these 5 weeks. Mm. Let me finish this up, come home, and deal with everything then. I didn't want anything happening to me, you know, while I was in Canada. Mm. And basically, I had to have a total abdominal hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. Still have my ovaries, but I had that done when I got back, June of 2017.
And then you had Dr. O'Keefe looking after
me. And then
I
had Dr. O'Keefe looking after me, getting me back to wellness. My uterus was so misshapen, there was no way I was going to be able to keep it. So it was tough.
Well,
it was tough. But fitness, diet, you know, health, support of James to get me through it. I had the operation and I was back inside of 7 weeks, I was back to being able to sprint along the beach. Had, you know, beach recovery.
Yeah, we went away. It was a case of, because they don't tell you anything about
you
getting back to health.
And then they
kick you out of the hospital. That's
okay.
It. They don't really tell you anything. So I did loads of research on it and then saw that apparently after an operation, the worst thing to do is lie around.
Sit around.
Because you need to keep everything circulating. So literally the day of the operation, Bev was up just slowly moving, and then
I could at least visit the bathroom.
Yeah. So then it was just keep it going from there every day, a tiny little bit more, a little bit of stretching, a little bit of just then fresh air, grounding, just all of these things that
it was the summer, so that
helped. And then it was like, you know, trying to work massage the scar and just all of these things, just, and then it went on, and the food and the you know, it was just everything, you know. So we worked
through it together, didn't we?
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
look how well
pleasure.
And vibrant you are today, and it's a testament to your health and well-being that led you to recover so well.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Before we turn to James, I'm going to be a bit cheeky, Beverly.
Go on.
So we've heard so much about the Drifters Girl. Give us a blast from one of the many great songs
okay.
that we hear. Come on.
All right. Well, I don't sing this song. This is sung by Benny King, who not many people realised was a drifter. That's how he started.
Yes.
That's where his solo career came from. So this is, you will hear this on the night. Again, not sung by me, but it's one of the standout tracks. When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. And you know the rest.
Oh, come on, what are you saying?
I just thought I'd sing a version of that song, but it's been totally deconstructed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's right at the end of Act One. And in order for me to, well, I can't describe it. You just have to come and see
exactly.
it.
Well,
come and see the
it.
Show, and then you'll know what I mean.
Christmas.
We will certainly be there. James, is this how you get to sleep every night? Does Beverly sing to you?
I make her do it every night. Yeah, I do, Mario. Funny you should say that. Every night. You know, it's one of the questions loads of people ask me all the time when I'm standing somewhere and, you know, Bev's coming out or whatever. They're like, oh, you're so lucky. Does she sing to you? But I'm like, yeah. But I, you know, I say I taught her everything she knows. So it's like,
you're in the shadows, you know.
You know, I'm like, you know.
Well, talking of the shadows and the plus ones, by the way, that was a privilege. Thank you.
Oh,
Beverly.
It's a pleasure. It's a joy to sing, and I love to sing.
But you told me a few weeks ago about your great podcast, The Plus Ones. Why don't you share with the listeners just what that covers?
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was, I've always got another thought pattern or something, you know, there's always like a double-edged sword of everything. So I wanted to do a podcast, and it just came one day. It was actually a friend of mine was talking about it. A friend I met years ago we called each other the Plus Ones.
Mm-hmm.
She was married to Tom Cochran, a massive singer in America, in Canada. We're like, oh, we're the Plus Ones, you know. And then it came to me like, oh, this is what I should do the podcast about, being the Plus One. So, and I've just got an amazing guest. I've only done one series. I've recorded some more, but I'm going to launch another series. But as you well know with podcasts, you need to do them every week, you know, to keep that momentum going. So I will be doing it again. But yeah, it's basically interviewing other people in that have partners in the public eye, or they're actually, so both of them sometimes are, you know, in the public eye.
Mm.
And it's interesting to get a different dynamic from each of them. Mm. So I've actually had, in the new series, I've had two guys that are together, and I'm not going to tell people who it is yet because I want you to listen. Anyway, and they both tell me the different stories. One's becoming more successful, like, in front of the camera. The other one's more behind now. So it's a really interesting dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And the mental health aspect of it as well, particularly the men, I want to find out, how does it work with your ego? How does it, you know, because men typically have big egos. So, you know, it's like, how does that work with your ego? How can you let that, you know, your partner deem more successful than you? So that was the whole ethos behind it.
Well, that brings us nicely, you know, you've alluded along the way to the challenges you faced in your life, and maybe brings us to the present day, to the Unguarded Warrior. Would you like to give us an overview of all of that, James?
Yeah, thank you. I think, as you say, it's anyone who follows me on Instagram or knows me knows, you know, I'm pretty open nowadays about the struggles I've been through, because I've got nothing to hide anymore, you know. It's been a rocky road, you know, I think the lessons I've learned and the stuff I've been through has given me a view on life that maybe not everyone has had, you know. So I feel like now I'm at a point, if I don't try and help men, because I feel like I've got a real affinity with women. I was brought up, you know, a single parent, my sister and my mum, you know, so I had a brother as well, but so I spent, you know, women are a big part of my life, but I feel like men, if we can fix us, we can kind of make a bigger change, you know what I mean, in the grand scheme of things. I think we're a lot of the issue, because I was anyway, I was a nightmare. So I feel like I need to help men, and if I can help them not go through what I've been through mentally as well as physically, then I feel like I've done something decent in life, and that it genuinely now is my 100% mission, is to try and help men become mentally and physically better than
better versions of themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And be okay to be vulnerable as well. I want us men to just be
that's
like...
That's okay.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to you know, you don't have to go out and drink 7 pints with your mate, you know, to have a conversation, to get deep, you know. You can just talk. We don't have to do it, chaps, you know, and that's what I want to... Go on, babe.
I was just going to interject by saying, you know, we look at the statistics behind, on one hand, male violence, and then on the other hand, self-inflicted violence, male suicide, and we see those numbers going up and up, and a lot of it seems to me... It's awful. A lot suicide. Of it, to me, is that as a society... We have not typically encouraged men to be, to express vulnerability, yes. You know, to...
Precisely the opposite, in
absolutely
fact.
The opposite.
We're conditioned to just...
And I was the same. I used to say to people, man up, you know, come on, man up. You know, it was like I was that alpha kind of, you know, I was a pro MMA fighter. I was a, you know, a drug dealer. I was a drug, you know, it was like... That, you know, I used to womanize her. It was terrible, you know, in every way. I was not a good human being. But there was always something else in there that was just trying to get out. But I, you know, I had terrible role models when I was young. My dad died, drank himself to death. You know, all of these things, I had awful role models. So I never felt, I didn't know how to act. And that's what I want to try and help people, to show them by how I act. This, you can be a man, you can be tough still, you can have banter with your friends and joke around like I do still, and you don't have to be all woo-woo and, like, you know, wear like bandanas and like, you know, you don't have to do it. You can still be a blokey bloke, but you don't have to be an idiot.
There's no shame in expressing how you feel.
Right. Yeah, and there's no shame in telling someone you love them, another man, or, you know, being like, you know, to another, not being combative towards another man. Yes. I always was. I've let that go. If I go in a room now, I don't feel that ego kicking off anymore. I go in with love. Whereas before I would judge, I'd see a guy coming in, I'd be like, oh, who's he? Is he better than me? Is he taller than me? Is he better looking than me? Is he this? Is he richer?
Yes,
is he black?
We're conditioned to be so competitive all the time.
It's not healthy. It isn't healthy. It's good to win and stuff, but you have to bring other people with you and bring them up. Don't go be single-minded on everything.
To the exclusion of everyone else.
To the exclusion, yeah. Yes. Bring fellow men, bring other men with you, and women, bring them up with you. Don't, you know, degrade them. Don't be down on them. Just let's bring each other up in life. That's a massive thing I want to bring out, an ego. I've had my ego cut so many times, you know, and it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. When I talk about like my the things that have happened in my life, I'm proud of everything that's happened. I'm grateful for everything, because if it hadn't have happened that way, I wouldn't be able to be the man I am now and have learned all I have. And Bev's been a big part of that journey for me, teaching me how to be a decent human being, showing me the way to be more empathetic. And we were literally talking about it today. I've started doing loads of random things that just, and Bev's like, that's empathy. And I'm like, it's you, get out of my head, you know? No. But I love that, you know, and I'm grateful for that. And I want to be that person that is that person, you know. And don't get me wrong, I'm still a bloke. If someone tries to do something, I'm gonna punch them in the face, you know. There's no, like, it's not, and that's not like an aggressive thing. I'm not like this zen woo-woo, like, you know, levitating person. I am still, but I've just found a way with certain things that I do and how I live now. And that's why I've created the Unguarded Warriors. And it's basically, to start with, it's going to be a retreat from the 17th to the 20th of December this year. Mm-hmm. It's before Christmas. It's a bold move, but I wanted to try and do some good before Christmas for men.
Mm-hmm. Just to say that Christmas is often the time of year where societal issues, marital issues, financial issues, all collide together, and it, the results, as we know, we see it all the time, can be catastrophic. So something like this right before Christmas maybe will be the difference for you know, someone out there of having the worst Christmas of their life, or perhaps the best, or at least the beginning of,
a journey
to having the best Christmas of their life.
It's the start of a journey. It's this first one's called, you know, presence. So it's about being present in the now before Christmas with your family, with your friends, with your loved ones. It's just about connecting with yourself, with other men, and with the earth. You know, we're going to do some outdoor stuff. We're going to, you know,
cold water therapy.
We're going to do cold water therapy, meditation. We're going to talk. We've got a couple of, we've got some amazing practitioners that are going to do workshops through just guiding through some issues that we've had in the past, you know, just working through that in a beautiful way. We're going to have sharing circles. We're also going to be chopping logs and having a fire pit and a barbecue.
And good food. I was going to say, you can have good food, aren't you?
You know, like nutritionally balanced food. I mean, you know, out in a beautiful farmhouse in Tunbridge Wells. So it's,
Well, look, there will be men listening to this podcast. You'll have piqued their interest. And for any of the themes that we've discussed today, including the Unguarded Warrior, please email lanzerhoff@theartsclub.co.uk. But also, James, do you want to plug your... Do you have an email address or website?
So just unguardedwarrior.com. That's it. Unguardedwarrior.com. I'm James O'Keefe, NRG, on Instagram. And clearly you know who Beverly Knight is on Instagram. It's not hard. It's about helping people and giving a bit back before Christmas. We've got a couple of spaces that I'm giving out to men who financially aren't in a good place, but need help. So if there is anyone out and you know someone who's really struggling, who can't afford it, just get in touch with me or Mario, and I want to help, you know? So, yeah.
Okay. Well, look. Is that the time already?
Yeah.
I know.
It's been so fantastic talking to you both. You're clearly best friends. And just having the chance to speak to you both has been a real privilege as well. So
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Beverly. Thank you, James.
Very grateful. And, very grateful. Thank you.
You know, you're friends of Lanzerhoff at the Arts Club and always welcome here.
Thank you so much.
It's so kind.
It's
an amazing place.
We love it.
Yeah.
We'll come see you again very soon.
Thank you, brother.
Take care.
Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.